You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the October 2025 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by continuing Digitally Speaking by Corey G.B. Sickles, WA3UVV. More new stuff, more old stuff. There are additional features that improve upon the new radio's value over the ID5100. What happens to the previous model here remains to be seen. Also, as this is written, the ID5200 has not passed FCC testing, so a delivery schedule is yet to be revealed. Kenwood's nascent TMD750, 144 MHz, 222 MHz, 430 MHz D-Star Mobile, once again showed up at the Tokyo Ham Fair as well. There is still nothing in the way of emergence from FCC testing at the moment. However, dealers are taking reservation orders for those wishing to get in the queue when the radio is released and pricing can be announced. An image on this page shows a radio set up with the head unit disconnected and leaning against the main unit, and the DTMF microphone lying on top of the main unit. The caption reads, "Yaesu's newest system fusion-capable dual-band mobile has been announced, with an output of 55 watts on VHF and 50 watts on UHF. They will hopefully be showing up at dealers soon. With the release of the FTM310DR and FTM310DR-ASP, Yaesu will offer 8 transceivers that support system fusion, the largest variety of DV models from any of the big three, courtesy Yaesu." Back to the text. Yaesu system fusion enthusiasts are hopeful for deliveries of the recently announced FTM310DR and FTM310DR-ASP, the latter offering enhanced audio performance. These models have passed FCC testing and certification. However, pricing has still not been announced as of yet. What this all adds up to is a palpable sense of anticipation and further hopes that the above models will be released and shipping in time for the holidays. Probably further down the road is the 24 GHz transverter option for the IC905 VHF UHF SHF transceiver from ICOM. They did address some of the concerns that IC905 owners with the 10 GHz transverter option had, especially how the 24 GHz transverter would interface with the radio body unit. Apparently, it is to interface with the 5.6 GHz RF connection, using it as the IF intermediate frequency. I suspect an upcoming firmware upgrade will also be in order to support the enhancement. ICOM also had some new antennas on display. These hold some promise with increasing the portability of IC905 setups in the field. The new antennas are based on a horn design, which typically offers a reasonable gain figure for a relatively low price. Attached to the 24 GHz transverter was a flat panel design. A concern I have is whether the new antennas will be able to be mounted for horizontal polarization without extensive modifications. In Japan, weak signal microwave enthusiasts utilize vertical polarization. In the Americas, we prefer horizontal for weak signal work on all VHF plus bands. Two images on this page show first a photograph of a radio's base and head units on display. The caption reads, "ICOM's newly announced ID5200 D-Star Mobile features a color screen, which is a notable upgrade from the ID5100. No price or shipping expectation have been revealed yet. Courtesy ICOM." The other image is a photograph of a rugged electronics enclosure connected to a round flat panel The caption reads, ICOM's 24 GHz transverter once again appeared at the Tokyo Ham Fair, along with some new antenna offerings, including a flat panel design. Who will be the first to conduct a two-way conversation via D-Star on 24 GHz? Courtesy ICOM. Back to the text. I believe that is how it is in Europe, Africa, and Australia as well. I bring this up since it was a concern with ICOM's line of parabolic dish antennas too. By the way, if you have been successful with making D-Star contacts on 23 centimeters, 13 centimeters, or any of our other microwave bands, please send me an email with some details. One more DV methodology revealed some significant news recently. The M17 camp has been working on an open-source software-defined portable transceiver known as the LIN-HT. The radio covers 420 to 450 MHz. At the moment, it offers only minimal 5 dBm output, although that would be enough to keep solid contact with a hotspot point of presence around the house. Plans are in progress to include a GRF 5604 RF amplifier in the design, so the output power level should soon be improved. There is the semblance of a development kit for those who are interested and have the necessary skill set. From what I have been able to ascertain, the elements total a bit north of a kilobuck, with the exact figure apparently dependent on whether or not you already own an appropriate donor radio. I am guessing the RF and microcontroller hardware sections are not yet created from scratch. Details on the package should be available directly from the M17 project by the time you read this. Connect Systems continues to offer UHF portables that cover 420 to 450 MHz while supporting M17 and DMR as well. Along with offering two DV methodologies, they also support analog FM, with the extended range that makes them attractive for GMRS as well. Their CS7000 M17 closeout of non-Bluetooth models without a man-down feature, of which hams have little to no need, is coming to an end. For $200, these radios are a bargain. With the full set of features and functions, they sell for $400. I cannot speak for everyone, but Bluetooth and a feature found mostly in public service circles are of less interest than the opportunity to save $200 is to me. Two images on this page show first a photograph of two horn antennas on display. The caption reads, "At Tokyo Ham Fair, ICOM displayed some new antennas to match up with the IC905. These were specified for the 10 GHz and 5.6 GHz bands. While we are used to seeing parabolic dish antennas for the microwave bands, the use of horn antennas is worthy as well. Typically, a well-engineered horn antenna will exhibit gain of about 17 dB. They are also a bit easier to set up and aim. Courtesy ICOM. The other image is a photograph of a tabletop radio on display. Behind it is a screen showing 7.020 CW decode. Next to the radio is a set of paddles. The caption reads, "Not so much a DV radio, but interesting nonetheless. ICOM revealed a Mark II replacement for the current IC7300. Announced specifications indicate improvements in the transmitter and receiver departments and more. The current model of the IC7300 is now on sale, perhaps to encourage depletion of inventory to make room for the new model soon." Courtesy ICOM. Back to the text. After last month's exploration of the RS-232C interface, I received a number of questions and comments regarding the implementation of RS-232C on a 9-pin connector, commonly known as the DB9, but more properly known as the DE9. Going back some decades, the first mainstream implementation of RS-232C on a DE9 was on the IBM PC Model 5150. IBM's serial interface utilized a single DB25, with each option card and board hosting a single port. The CGA, Color Graphics Adapter, used a female DE9 for the TTL level output pins. The bracket panel on the board also has an RCA phono jack for RS-170A composite video. The other supported display board was the MDA monochrome display adapter. It too used a female DE9 for video output. In addition, a female DB25 accompanied it on the mounting bracket. This was a parallel printer interface with pins corresponding to the popular standard created and supported by Centronics. While the AMP connector on such printers used a 36-pin version, less than half of that number was actually needed for the interface. While the IBM PC introduced a new bus architecture, new microprocessor, new operating system, and many other things, which were not existing standards, it was, after all, IBM. Seemingly overnight, other companies began advertising new memory, display, and peripheral interfaces. In order to fit the physical connectors needed, a male DE9 became the new standard for RS-232C interfaces, prompting all sorts of DE9 to DB25 cables and adapters. If you visit some of the online magazine archives for Byte, Creative Computing, Interface Age, Kilobaud, and others, you will see a definite line for before and after the introduction of the IBM PC. Likewise, amateur radio magazines, most assuredly 73 in their I.O. section, show the growth of IBM-compatible systems, options, and peripherals. By the time the IBM PC XT was released, with its improved 8-slot motherboard, it was common to be able to find third-party boards with 2 parallel and 2 serial ports supported. The bracket on the board supported one of each type of interface, while the second set was on a different bracket connected via ribbon cables. As this took up a slot space, there were also housings that fit over the back panel to support these connectors and more. In some ways, the world of the IBM PC XT resembled the Volkswagen Beetle, with a plethora of non-IBM options becoming more and more popular. My first IBM was the PC XT. I purchased it stripped, with no floppies, no display board, and only 64K of RAM. Fun fact, you could set the display dip switches on the motherboard to use the first RS-232C serial port as a connection to a terminal in lieu of a CGA or MDA board. That option later disappeared. I purchased a pair of third-party half-height 5.25-inch 360K DSDD double-sided double-density mini floppy disk drives, third-party 64K RAM chips, third-party memory board, third-party CGA board, and a multi-IO board that possessed 2 parallel ports, 2 serial ports, floppy controller, and more. My video monitor was a 12-inch amber display with a composite video input, left over from a previous computer system I owned. Two images on this page show first a photograph of the display of a radio. The radio's on and the screen reads 144.390 APRS channel, 438.500 Kenwood ARC transmit. The caption reads, "Kenwood continues to generate buzz and anticipation for their upcoming TMD750A tri-band, 144 MHz, 222 MHz, 430 MHz, analog FM, D-Star, and APRS-capable mobile transceiver with color screen on a remote control head. Interestingly, Kenwood's current THD75A portable and upcoming mobile offer a more robust feature set than ICOM's relatable D-Star products, courtesy Kenwood. The second image shows information in table form. The table is entitled Table 1 DE9RS232C. The first column is labeled PIN. The second column is labeled Function PC. The third column is labeled Function Device. The first row of information reads PIN 1, Function PC Carrier Detect, Function Device Carrier Detect. Similarly, for the next row, PIN 2, Received Data, Transmitted Data, PIN 3, Transmitted Data, Received Data, PIN 4, Data Terminal Ready, Data Terminal Ready, PIN 5, Ground, Ground, PIN 6, Data Set Ready, Data Set Ready, PIN 7, Request to Send, Clear to Send, PIN 8, Clear to Send, Request to Send, PIN 9, Ring Indicator, Ring Indicator. The caption reads, Table 1, DE9RS232C. Back to the text. This saved me many hundreds of dollars when compared to IBM prices and kept several expansion slots free. As I knew how to solder, I never bought a pre-assembled set of cables. I just got connectors and wired them as needed. I saved a lot of money in that department as well. In time, I purchased another set of DSDD mini floppy disk drives and a second floppy controller for increased storage, as the price of a 10 megabyte or even 5 megabyte hard disk and controller were beyond my budget. Even with this kludge of options, I got a lot of work done on that system, and it helped me with a small side business. My printer was a Centronics 739 9-pin dot matrix model that supported multi-part 8.5 by 11-inch fan-fold tractor feed paper, or a friction feed continuous roll, as we used for RTTY, radio teletype, teleprinters. While clients saw reports and other hard copy neatly assembled from the tractor paper, I used the continuous rolls for development and in-house hard copy. Two of my RS-232C serial ports were used for a modem I had, and a 6-pen plotter that I picked up at a hamfest for a mere $25. I thought I was going to have to spend some time fixing it, but with just a bit of cleaning, it worked great. Within weeks of this acquisition, I got a call from an accountant I knew who was looking for some color charts and graphs to go along with a business plan for one of his clients. Given my costs and what I was able to charge, I soon made enough to get a new HF rig, hard drive, and more toys. Please take a look at the table, which details the pinout of the DE9 implementation of RS-232C. As RS-232C is a point-to-point interface, the transmitted and received data pins are swapped between the DCE, PC, and DTE, terminal device connectors. Likewise, the clear to send and request to send are also swapped. Signals such as carrier detect, data set ready, data terminal ready, and carrier detect are set and read in only one direction. Further, the signal ring indicator is used almost exclusively with modems. If you reference last month's treatment, you will quickly see that the DE9 variant is an abbreviated implementation of RS-232C, reduced to just the essential signals. There is no need for support of synchronous data exchanges with clocks, nor is there any reason to support the secondary signal sets found in the full 25-pin implementation. This reflects on the changes in technology since the original RS-232C specifications, as well as how the vast majority of asynchronous serial communications were being implemented in the early 80s as well as today. The need for fewer signal lines enabled the use of smaller connectors. Synchronous serial data transfers still had a place in mid-range and mainframe communications, but not so much in the world of personal computers. Unless I had the need to send payroll deposit data to my firm's bank via an IBM 3872 modem every 2 weeks, there was no need to delve into such things. I cannot imagine even one application for use with amateur radio that would be better implemented with synchronous serial communications, given all that would be required to initiate and maintain such a connection. However, asynchronous serial data in a variety of transport forms, including RS-232C, should be usable for the foreseeable future. Also in the foreseeable future are the radios discussed above, along with more to come. And finally, Bits and Bytes by Gail Van Horn, W4GVH, W4GVHLA at gmail.com. The countdown to DX season, October signals ahead. As October arrives, so does the start of the annual DX season in the Northern Hemisphere. Longer nights and shifting propagation patterns bring a familiar sense of anticipation to the radio hobby. For many of us, it feels a bit like opening night at the ballpark. The bands are alive again, and the chase begins anew. The B-25 winter broadcast season begins on Sunday, October 26th, bringing the usual shuffle of frequencies. Think of it as a reset button for the shortwave world. Despite careful planning, frequency collisions are inevitable, making the season start a balancing act among stations. While we wait for the B-25 shuffle, now is the time to check your gear. Inspect antennas, coaxes, connectors, and balance. A little maintenance now can save a lot of frustration later. If software-defined radios are your tool of choice, be sure your software is current, and remember that solid connectors and antennas make all the difference. Update your logs too, whether from a notebook, spreadsheet, or SDR recording archive. Mark those first catches on October 26th as your personal opening day of the DX season. If you're sending a reception report, noting the opening day might be a plus for station response. Each monitoring session for me begins with opening Simon's World Map, where I track the shifting patterns of darkness and daylight by the hour. It's an excellent tool for planning your monitoring and following signal paths. Don't forget to check my Monday morning postings at Shortwave Central for the weekly propagation forecast bulletins, and by midweek, you'll find Mike Terry's UK propagation updates. For an extra brush-up on propagation, Amazon offers several informative books that explain how radio waves affect reception. One standout reference is Propagation and Radio Science by the ARRL. Finally, set yourself a challenge. Log a new country or region this month on shortwave or medium wave. Stay connected. Share your catches with fellow DXers on blogs, YouTube, X, and hobby forums. After all, DX season is always more fun when shared. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.